Oh, yes, it is time for your wrestling nostalgia. And tonight we are looking back about 7 years to WrestleMania 30, when the rise of the Yes Movement led Daniel Bryan from obscurity all the way to the main event, winning the World Heavyweight Championship in a triple threat match. I don't know about you, but I'm ready. Let's get things going right now.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is, it's gonna get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia here on the WWE Podcast. It's going to be a fun one tonight. We're not going back very far. 7 years to WrestleMania 30. And I say it's not very far. But when I bring up WrestleMania 30 and you realize it's 7 years ago, that's a different perspective. Because, yes, there are a lot of nostalgia shows that I look back 15, 20 years in some cases. And tonight it's only 7. But it's WrestleMania 30, which was 7 years ago. That is really the crazy part to me, is that the whole Daniel Bryan story was 7 years ago. My God. I mean, let that sink in. Yes, it's not exactly 7 years. I know that. I mean, it's coming up on 7 years this WrestleMania, but for all intents and purposes, it's 7 years ago. So, this is going to be a fun one because I've never really covered this, and this got suggested to me by a few listeners, and I will be getting to it momentarily. If this is your first time joining me, we do this once a week. We do the Wrestling Nostalgia once a week, and if you'd like to give me suggestions on what you'd want to hear discussed, email me, realwwepodcast@gmail.com, and get your suggestions in because I do fulfill them. I'm doing that right now. And it's a good suggestion. You guys put stuff out to me that I feel stupid for not even thinking of, right? I mean, how did I not even consider this one? I think I sometimes look back too far, and I think nostalgia is 90s and ruthless aggression, but to be honest, could be any time. Any time in the past is nostalgia. I mean, we're constantly having the past pass by us, so it could be at any time. I mean, I could do a wrestling nostalgia on the TLC pay-per-view from this past Sunday, because technically it's nostalgic. But anyway, this is going to be a lot of fun. And tomorrow, we're also going to have the NXT review, and we're going to do the mailbag, which will be out shortly after this episode. I kind of do a dual recording on Wednesday nights so that you guys have the mailbag and you have the wrestling nostalgia. So the mailbag is chock full this week. I think we have like 10 voicemails. And I'm not going to say it's going to be an hour and a half show, okay? I mean, I do respond as quickly as I can and concisely as I can. And certainly we had some fiery questions last week, and I'm sure they're equally as fun this week. But I welcome them. So that is going to be, if you haven't already seen it in the feed, it is there as, I think, episode 8. I think we're in the 8th episode of that. But nonetheless, guys, tons more coming this week with Mimi and her week in wrestling ups and downs. We have Michael Ritter and SmackDown Review. So, and myself and returning co-host Anthony DeMarco coming this Sunday night for your week in review. So it'll be great to have him back. I joined him on his episode of Rivalries discussing Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon. And if you haven't seen that, or heard it rather, check that out on the feed. It was a blast. Always great talking with him. And there's just never a bad episode that we have, I don't think. So follow us on Instagram at WWE_podcast or on Twitter at @wrestling_audio. You can also head on over to Patreon. If you want to get rid of the ads, head on over to Patreon. And for $1, you get the entire library ad-free. No interruptions, just streamlined. And that's where you can get it for $1. You can even get into the pay-per-view tier level, and you can come on the show as a co-host, and we can discuss any topic you'd like for a full show. So certainly no shortage of content, and all streamlined for $1 a month. Not bad. Not bad. And I'd like to also shout out our latest patrons. And that would be Chris Beaudry, hope I said that right, and Aiden O'Connell. So, guys, thank you so much. I hope you enjoy your ad-free experience. I know I always do every time I... And I listen to tons of wrestling podcasts, and I have subscriptions on a few of them, and it's always fun to be able to listen ad-free and not have to worry about, you know, hitting that skip button or being interrupted. So, Chris and Aiden, thank you so much for your patronage, and you guys can join them and join the fun on over at patreon.com/WWE podcast. So, all right, well, let's get into it. Now that all of the housekeeping items are out of the way, we are talking about WrestleMania 30, and this took place on April 6th, 2014, from New Orleans, Louisiana, in the Superdome, or as Hulk Hogan infamously said, the Silverdome. And this was in front of 75,167 people. God, I can't wait till we can actually see that again. And what I'd like to do, I know we're talking about Daniel Bryan and winning the World Championship at WrestleMania 30, but I want to also, just to give you a lay of the land, give you the events that happened at WrestleMania 30, just so you can kind of feel out the environment at that time. And remember, this is when NXT was a joke. NXT was people carrying kegs around the ring and having Titus O'Neil trip on himself and doing just silly hokey crap that was, it really was a total joke at the time. And it's amazing in 7 years what it has become. So that's how far back we're talking. So here's what the card looked like. 8 matches. Number one, the Usos defeated Los Matadores, the Real Americans, and Rybacksel. I bet you're wondering who the hell these people are, right? Well, we know who Jimmy and Jey Uso are, who at the time were still the paint-wearing, just babyface-loving, just generic tag team. I mean, they were great in the ring, but I really despised what they were for several years, and I'm so glad what they've evolved into. Los Matadores, who were Diego and Fernando, and the Real Americans, Cesaro and Jack Swagger, with Zeb Coulter, Dutch Mantel, for those of you who are older wrestling fans. Rybacksel, Curtis Axel, and Ryback, if you didn't guess. And they were in a fatal four-way tag team elimination match for the WWE Tag Team Championship. Again, the Usos won in 16 minutes. The second match of the night was Daniel Bryan versus Triple H, and we're going to get to that. So, I mean, we all know the outcome. I mean, Daniel Bryan did beat Triple H. I don't think that's a shock to anyone. But that was 25 minutes. Wow, I don't remember it that long. 25 minutes and 58 seconds that this match went. So the winner was to enter into the WWE World Heavyweight Championship match later that night. That was the stipulation. So we'll get to that. The Shield, which was Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, defeated Kane and the New Age Outlaws, Billy Gunn and Road Dogg, in a six-man tag team match that went 2 minutes and 56 seconds. Cesaro won the 31-man Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Cesaro won by eliminating the Big Show. And it was in 13 minutes, 25 seconds. John Cena defeated Bray Wyatt in a singles match in 22 minutes, 25 seconds. Brock Lesnar defeats The Undertaker in 25 minutes and 12 seconds, ending The Undertaker's winning streak of 21-0. I think I've done a nostalgia on that in and of itself. If I haven't, I don't know what I'm thinking. I should. Boy, I'll never forget that moment. Never. Sitting there like, they got to restart the match. Something went wrong. Somebody's going to come out and say, no, you know, nope. It was just dead silence. I don't think any of us as wrestling fans will ever forget where we were when we watched that happen. Never. It's kind of like a 9/11. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but everyone always references like big events like 9/11 or, you know, if you're old enough, Kennedy's assassination. I mean, I'm going way back in my parents' era, but big ticket items. You don't forget where you are. And in wrestling terms, this is one of them. AJ Lee defeats Asuka, Alicia Fox, Brie Bella, Cameron, Emma, Eva Marie, Layla, Naomi, Natalia, Nikki Bella, Rosa Mendez, Summer Rae, and Tamina Snuka. Whew. in a Vicky Guerrero invitational match for the WWE Divas Championship. This only went 6 minutes. So think about that the next time you look at our women's product today. That only 7 years ago, the women's division was a joke. And yes, AJ Lee, a bright spot. Okay, certainly a bright spot. Maybe one of the only bright spots, because I look at the, and Natalya to some degree. Okay, Oksana, Alicia Fox, Summer Rae, Rosa Mendez, Eva Marie, Layla, Naomi. No. Naomi, maybe. She was on the rise. So you have a couple of bright spots, but 80% of this you can kind of just toss to the side. And it was for the beloved Divas Championship. Wow. So, guys, it was not that long ago that the women were still an afterthought, only getting 6 minutes out of hours-long pay-per-view. They get 6 minutes. Yikes. Boy, have we come a long way in women's wrestling. And then, in the eighth and final match in the main event, Daniel Bryan beats Batista and Randy Orton, and he wins by submission, tapping out Dave Batista. And that was a triple threat match for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. This one went 23 minutes and 20 seconds. So, certainly a card that was worth, you know, I guess worth WrestleMania worthy in some respects. Daniel Bryan was the focus of this, the entire pay-per-view, as it should have been. But of course, we had the shocker, maybe the biggest talking point, with The Undertaker's undefeated streak being broken. And Daniel Bryan also winning the World Heavyweight Championship. We'll never forget that image of him standing there with, you know, his hands up and the confetti falling and people losing their minds. It was a great moment. You know, you could argue whether Undertaker's undefeated streak was a bigger talking point than Daniel Bryan winning the World Heavyweight Championship, but this was the WrestleMania card, guys. You know, actually, the more I look at it, is this really WrestleMania worthy? I don't know. I'm going to just politely say this looks like a Monday Night Raw. Outside of a few with Brock and Taker and Cena and Wyatt, about five of these matches could have been on a Monday Night Raw, and none of us would have known any different. So, but again, that was 7 years ago in April of 2014. And my, oh my, have we come a long way. And, you know, people may complain about today's product. And if they do, I'd reference them the Divas Championship era. That's what I would do. Okay. So Daniel Bryan, guys, and this is a focus on the match at WrestleMania 30. This is not a Daniel Bryan versus the Authority full review of every interaction they've ever had. Okay, I'm going to glance over it because it is important to understand why this match happened and how it happened and the precedent that it set moving forward for WWE and the fans. Good and bad. There's certainly some things I'm sure WWE, I don't want to say regrets, but had to have seen coming with the way they allowed fans to dictate their story. And that's not a bad thing. They should always want to find what the fans want. But the thing is that Vince has gone on record of saying many times that sometimes he gives the fans something they didn't even know they wanted. So maybe Vince is always thinking, well, I'm the smartest guy in the room. I'm gonna tell them things and show them things they didn't even know they wanted more than the things they think they want the most. So with that mentality, I'm sure that Vince McMahon was absolutely just disgusted with the fans' choice of Daniel Bryan. I'm sure he was. Because prior to WrestleMania 30, prior to that, when was the last time that WWE had a small man champion win the main event at WrestleMania? I think the only man that comes to mind is Rey Mysterio. Perhaps the greatest luchador ever. Perhaps that is the only time that I can think of in modern wrestling that a small performer was able to overcome the big man's world. And so this was something not that did not occur very often. And WWE Vince had scouted the main event of WrestleMania 30 to be Randy Orton versus Batista. That was going to be the main event. And that was planned for many months. It was very well known. I remember reading about it. I remember even CM Punk commenting on it during his infamous podcast with Colt Cabana that dropped, I don't know how many months after he finally left WWE. He knew that WrestleMania 30, Vince was looking for Randy Orton versus Batista, and CM Punk said, well, if that's the main event, that's going to absolutely suck. And when CM Punk told Colt Cabana about this story, you know, he's saying that he told Vince, like, how can you not see this? This is Daniel Bryan's year, right? And eventually, Vince was forced. This was a forced insertion of Daniel Bryan, and CM Punk dictated that story to the fans and basically said that, you know, the fans are willing this to happen. How can you not see that this main event's going to suck if it's just Randy Orton and Batista? Which it would have. The fans would have absolutely, like, revolted. I mean, I actually believe crap would have been thrown in the ring. People would have left their seats if Daniel Bryan had lost the match to Triple H earlier in that night. I don't even have really doubts about that. So we have a main event that was forced by Vince, and knowing Vince the way that, I'm not going to say the way I do because I don't know him, but everything I've gathered over the last, I don't know, 25 years almost I've been watching wrestling, that this had to have burned and torched his backside, because you know that Randy Orton Batista is such a Vince McMahon main event, isn't it? And Daniel Bryan, in his eyes, has no business in this type of environment, in this setting. You know that's what he's thinking. You know it. I don't even need to have it confirmed as fans. We don't need someone to actually call Vince on the phone and ask him outright. We know. We know that Vince would actually, inside his brain, be cringing at the fact that the fans chose Daniel Bryan. What are they seeing him? You know that's true. And the whole yes movement really was, it was about the hand signal, yes, 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 which actually started, was it the WrestleMania before when he was heel with AJ Lee and he was facing Sheamus and he was coming out to the ring doing yes, 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 and doing that in an obnoxious way that actually caught on and became the new what? And I mean the new what phrase, which actually started with Austin in 2002 and has since not been defeated. But the yes movement, the yes chants, have not stopped. It's a thing that will never stop. It is for eternity, I believe, that yes chants will continue. Because they can be applied to so many different settings, promos, and things like that. So the point I'm making, though, is that the yes movement started really there. The misbookings of Daniel Bryan. Him being fired for choking out Justin Roberts when he was part of the Nexus, which if you don't forget or don't remember, he was actually a part of the Nexus originally. He actually got fired by WWE for choking Justin Roberts. I believe it was with his own tie. And Shawn Michaels was instrumental in bringing him back. He comes back. And from there, the fans just rally behind him, and they want to see him move up and up and up. And the reasons, if you're wondering, well, why? What was so special about this guy at the beginning that drew fans? It was his relatability. He was extremely likable on camera. He could cut a good to very good promo. He felt authentic. He was a level above everyone at that time in the ring. He just felt like one of the fans there. He didn't feel like he was playing wrestler. He felt so genuine. And he was very, again, very relatable, likable. And the fans just grabbed onto that at a time that they needed to grab onto something believable and relatable. And he's also an underdog. As human nature, we tend to root for the underdog. And again, he also looks more like a fan than he does the typical pro wrestler. More people can relate with what he looks like than they can't with Randy Orton and Batista. You know, 6'5", 270, muscle-bound dudes. Yeah, they're larger than life, but they're not as relatable and down-to-earth as Daniel Bryan was. I don't know how more to explain it. So they did kind of an authority versus the man, right? It's authority versus the common man, I should say, which is what Daniel Bryan really represented. And it was very much akin to how many times we've seen an authority figure that's heel versus the up and rising babyface. It's a tried and true formula, but it is kind of one that's been overdone a lot over the last 15 years up until the demolishment of the general manager position, until Adam Pearce just magically came along. But yes, it was a very tired formula, but it was one that was refreshing because Daniel Bryan himself was so refreshing. And the authority were exactly what they were. They were truly the authority on screen and behind. So the truth there was also driving the fans to cheer for Daniel Bryan. The fans knew that the way they treated Daniel Bryan, and creatively especially, that they didn't have any true plans to have him move up and be in the main event. There were no plans for this. None. Stephanie McMahon even called Daniel Bryan a B-plus player because I think they truly believed it. There's a lot of truth there. I think that they really believed that. That wasn't just a slogan. So you'll notice a theme here. A lot of the things I'm talking about in creative and what they showed on screen in promos was based in a lot of truth. The authority, real on-air figures, authority figures, and behind-the-scene authority figures. The B-plus promo from Stephanie McMahon, you can pretty much bank they were thinking that when they see him, great hand, he can work with anybody, B-plus guy. You know that's probably an actual conversation. You feel it as a person. Like as a human, we can kind of sense these things. And I don't know, maybe I'm just overstepping my bounds here, but that's how I felt. So Daniel Bryan is the perfect guy to go against the authority. He gets the fans rallied behind him. He starts the yes chants. I remember he had a yes overtake Raw, like where a hostage situation. I don't know if that's the right phraseology, but he had a whole bunch of fans in the ring holding Raw hostage and demanding that Triple H face him at WrestleMania. And if he wins, he goes into the main event. So he had to bypass Triple H to get to the main event. Now, if you remember, Daniel Bryan was actually champion earlier in the year. He won the WWE Championship actually twice during the summer, albeit briefly. Orton cashed in his Money in the Bank contract on Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam with the helping hand of Triple H. And Daniel Bryan was forced to vacate the title after beating Orton at Night of Champions. So there were a couple of times that the authority screwed him out of the championship. And that led to the even more support behind Daniel Bryan, which at that point they kind of understood that once they start to screw him very visually on screen, you know, take the championship from him and just say you had to vacate it, have Orton come out and do what he did, cashing in the Money in the Bank, then you know you're off to the races. I think by SummerSlam, they had kind of realized that this is going to be a WrestleMania story that we're going to start telling now in August. And that's when I think they kind of came to terms and Vince came to terms that that's what is going to happen. And I mean, the rest is history. Of course, we had Daniel Bryan beat Triple H in what I do recall was a pretty good match, very predictable outcome, but one that, did it really need to happen? I always wondered, did that match even need to happen? I mean, to have Triple H on the card, he's a name. There's always that slight chance that Daniel Bryan loses, but he didn't. He overcame Triple H and he ended up being inserted into the main event of WrestleMania 30. And we're going to get some audio in just a minute. But he was in that event, again, not supposed to be there when the original plans for WrestleMania 30 were drawn up. And he is there. The fans are still losing their minds for him. They're still believing in him. They're still rallying behind him like he is the hometown hero. And so it was just a great feel-good moment. So we're going to get to some audio. I'll react to that audio. And then I'm going to also talk on the back end of this, towards the end of the show here. What implications did this have for future storylines in WWE? You know, what precedent did this set for fans and for WWE moving forward? Both good and bad, as I said, so I really want to discuss that. But first, let's get to some audio from that match, and we'll talk about it in real time here.
And now Batista, looking for the Batista bomb to put Randy Orton away and win the championship. There's the Batista bomb. Daniel Bryan, Nina Batista, Nina Batista, Nina Batista. Come on, Bryan. Come on, Bryan. Yes, Lord. Come on, Daniel. Come on, Daniel. Tap out Batista. Tap out Batista. Tap out Batista. No way. Batista's got to tap.
So throughout that match, and I did pick the ending of the match, but really throughout that entire match, Daniel Bryan wasn't a huge factor where the reason I say that is because they were trying to, Randy Orton and Batista were both trying to kind of shove him away. They were both trying to just fight one another and, you know, pretend that Bryan isn't really a part of this match. And that I know that I understand the story they were trying to tell, but the point I'm bringing up is that they, when you listen to the crowd reaction, if you watch that full match and you listen to Batista and Randy Orton, you know, hitting their finishers on one another and, you know, putting each other in holds and, you know, punching each other in the face, all of that, the fans are booing everything. I mean, everything that they do, they're booing or not reacting or not caring about Batista and Randy Orton, what they do to one another. I mean, it's all about Daniel Bryan. They were even chanting Daniel Bryan when there was a segment of the match where Daniel Bryan was on the outside of the ring and Randy Orton and Batista were just the ones left in there, and they're, you know, hitting bombs on one another and all that stuff. And the fans are just chanting for Daniel Bryan the entire time, completely ignoring the fact that there's, you know, two megastars in the ring. It was just so telling about where Daniel Bryan stood in the minds of fans at this time. It was genius. In terms of the psychology of this match, and really the execution was good too. I mean, I really have no problem with the way that Daniel Bryan won, coming in after Batista hit a Batista bomb on Randy Orton. Randy Orton rolls out of the ring, but then Daniel Bryan hits the running knee on Batista and puts him in the yes lock to capture the championship. I mean, just imagine if Daniel Bryan wasn't in this main event. You talk about just, CM Punk was right. This match would have been a disaster. The fans would have crapped all over it, almost as bad as I crapped all over Roman Reigns and Triple H the following year. So this was certainly a moment for Daniel Bryan, the fans, and I got goosebumps just watching fans there. You know, you forget how much fans really mean until you watch 70,000 of them go nuts and what it does for pro wrestling, especially pro wrestling. When everything's built off crowd reaction and the fans are there, and my God, just watch it. Go watch it. Give goosebumps to yourself. Go watch the main event of WrestleMania 30 and take a listen. Or just watch the very beginning of WrestleMania 30 when you had Hogan, Rock, and Austin come out. I mean, I was just watching that as well prior to this show. So, again, amazing moment for Daniel Bryan. And the story was very simple to follow. That's also key. You don't overthink this. You don't overbook it. You just do what makes sense. And what made sense there was to give the strap to Daniel Bryan and let him go crazy with it and let the fans go crazy. And boy, did they. And the Miracle on Bourbon Street, you know, Michael Cole's line that I'm sure he thought of beforehand, and that's fine. You know, he was trying to stamp that moment with a phrase, and that certainly fits. A Miracle on Bourbon Street, they're in New Orleans. Fine, fine. You know, the Miracle Kid. Okay. You know, that certainly worked. I'd forgotten, actually, that he said that, but it was that. And they were phrasing it as a overcoming of the man, overcoming of the authority. Very, very tried and true formula, as I said. So now, what does this mean moving forward? What has it meant? I think more accurately of a question, what has it meant since WrestleMania 30? Well, I think from WWE's perspective, they have put the fans in control of the story more than they probably would have liked it to have happen. They have set the precedent to fans, given what Daniel Bryan was able to achieve, simply and solely because of massive fan support, that whenever fans don't feel like they are booking the right person the right way, they should vocalize it. And the more people that get behind it, it'll send a message to WWE to change what they're doing. And that is a dangerous thing that I'm sure WWE is wishing that it maybe didn't happen the way it did with Daniel Bryan, because the fans go, wait a minute, we're in control now? We can dictate who does what and where, and we can just scream at house events and house shows and at live events, and just if we vocalize what we feel, WWE is going to just do it. They are our slaves, so to speak. Well, if WWE may view it that way, and I can see why they may have set a dangerous precedent, but they're in the business of serving fans, right? They're in the business of giving fans what they want. They always tell us that. That's what they say. Vince says it every time he's on a podcast, that we give people what they want. But they also have a second master to please, and those are the sponsors and the networks that are the ones really generating the mass amounts of money. Yes, the fans do, with merchandise and subscriptions and ticket sales. But the real money comes from the networks and the sponsorships. Take a look at the Fox deal. $1 billion deal. Guaranteed $1 billion. They don't even have the fans involved in that, and they already have, you know, $1 billion in their pocket. So when they have multiple masters to serve, fans don't always come first. Fans do not always come first. Plus you have creative who are usually worried about what Vince thinks and writing for Vince rather than writing for the fans. So again, also too, if they're the ones who are feeling this is dangerous, if WWE feels that setting the precedent that fans should go to shows or fans that do come to shows feel like they can control the narrative by just screaming things, they may feel that, oh, they're giving fans too much power. Well, you just told us to come there and be your focus group every night. You're the ones telling us to go there and be loud. You're the ones telling us to vocalize what we feel. So we do, and now you push back. Well, you may be asking, what are you talking about? They push back. Why would they push back? Roman Reigns. Anybody remember Roman Reigns being a babyface the last 5 years, 6 years? To the chagrin of many, many, many fans? Anybody remember John Cena as a babyface when the fans never got a heel version of him? Which was, it's a crime that we never got a little bit of a heel run with him. It's a crime. So WWE, Vince, more specifically, more often than not, feels like he knows better than the fans. And he has been proven wrong many times. Look at the brilliance of Roman Reigns right now. And all the programs he could have had with babyfaces in the past, and he chugged along with keeping Roman Reigns' babyface because he's stubborn. He feels like he knows better, and he feels like this is going to be a better outcome. And he probably would believe that this is a better outcome because he's a more seasoned performer. He understands his character more. Nonsense. He would have gained that experience, been more comfortable if you'd let him turn heel many years ago. And he probably would be at that mega babyface level now because the fans would have had a chance to hate him. And he would have understood his character more. It just, Vince McMahon can, I mean, I'm having fake arguments with a guy that's not even here or listening, which is kind of sad. But knowing WWE like I do and just watching them the way they book on a weekly basis, I feel like I'm pretty confident in that fake argument I just had with myself. So, okay. So I hope you guys enjoyed the show. It's always fun to look back, even if it's just 7 years, a couple years. So keep sending those suggestions, realwwepodcast@gmail.com, or DM me on Instagram and send me your suggestions there. It's always fun to talk with you guys on there, or wrestling_audio on Twitter. So lots of ways to get in touch with the show. I hope you guys enjoyed this. It's fun to look in the past and remember wrestling the way it used to be and see the things that are better, see the things that are worse. That's what this nostalgia show is all about. It's time to just kind of lose yourself in wrestling. Alrighty, thank you everybody, and as always, I'll talk to you next time.